The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel is here. Happy holidays to you. Last year, I think I gave you Mensch on a bench. Where's the Mensch?
He's taking a little time off.
With his family?
He's feeding the pigeons.
All right, I have a question for you, because I keep seeing these promos every 10 minutes for this Vice special on the 2008 economic collapse.
Yeah.
Your chief of staff.
No, 2008, I was a congressman.
When were you made chief?
2009.
Well, I made 2008, but you take over 2009.
Okay, so who was chief when the S hit the fan?
Josh Bolton.
Oh, that's right. I
was appointed by Speaker Pelosi then to be the point for the Democrats to negotiate with President Bush's Hank Paulson, lives here in Chicago, Josh Bolton, and negotiate a package known as TARP. Best policy, yep. The worst politics in American history in the last 20 years.
The reason I bring it up is, what is your gut feel about the economy nationally now? I mean, the market floating around at 25,000, a little crazy.
Yeah, but here's my thing is that I believe that it's at the top, and you're going to begin to see what I call the Trump slump come in. And it's going to
trademark that.
Huh?
Trademark that.
I'm doing that. Right now, that's right. Yeah. Trump slump.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's going to happen like a broken watch twice a day.
And I don't know that I want to know the answer to this. Was it as close to global disaster as we think it was?
So we have a meeting in the Speaker's office. Senate comes over. It's House and Senate, D's and R's. The President sends Bernanke, Paulson, and SEC Chair Cox. And Bernanke opens up. We're all sitting around a conference table. The three of them are sitting together opposite everybody as we wrap around. And they say that in the next 72 hours, if we don't do something, the entire world economy will collapse.
Wow.
And go. And it was like, literally, like, well, is there another group of people that we can talk to for a second? I mean, it was like, you got to be kidding me.
Let's bring in the other people.
Actually, it's been written about, so I will say this. So Senator Judd Gregg from New Hampshire was part of the appointees on the Republican side. Myself, we were in a side room with Hank Paulson, who had a bad cold, been over in Europe,
uh-huh.
He had a stress moment.
Right.
It's like Sunday night at like 11 o'clock at night. And he basically...
collapsed?
Not collapsed, but, you know, is short of breath. And Senator Gregg and I look at each other and decided, well, the market is too fragile across the globe. We're not going to tell anybody. And that room...
You know what? That's actually true. Yeah, they couldn't take it.
If we announced that the Secretary Treasurer of the United States of America at this critical juncture
is hyperventilating.
So we went back in the room, he took it, got his breath and everything like that. We went back in the room, we negotiated in the next 72 hours, and people forget this. When the agreement was reached, went to the House floor, the Republicans voted it down. The market from that moment forward dropped 800 points in like half an hour. And then we... had to reassemble it, and we then did pass it, etc. And that was the first step. And I give President Bush credit for, because that's anything but free market, because it was a massive intervention in the economy by the government, contrary to principles. But it was within 72 hours to 96 hours, the world, and if you look at data, there was a 3-4 month stretch going last month of President Bush, first 3 or 4 months of President Obama, that you basically went to a small D depression. It was not a recession. The contraction of the economy, unemployment. We were getting, people forget this. Okay, so now we get 200,000 jobs added, 220,000 jobs added, 190. We were literally getting monthly 900,000 loss, 850,000 job loss. I mean, that's a 1 million swing.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable what was going on. People forget it. And in many ways, the TARP, the bailout, you look at also what was done for the auto industry at the time.
Yep.
You look at what was done on the quantitative easing by the Fed. It worked. Now, it also set in place a set of politics that led to the one in 1600 Pennsylvania, the one that shall not be named,
mm-hmm.
at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because I actually believed, which is what I said at the White House time, we needed Old Testament justice. Nobody from the financial committee was brought to atone for their sins.
Right.
So they got bailed out, and the middle class says, you're in my pocket, you're getting all this money, trillions of dollars, are just seeing numbers with zeros they had never seen before in their life, and nobody, Not one major banker made it to the criminal justice
system. Is there a short answer to why? Why all of those who were...
I'm going to reserve this for years.
For your own?
Yeah, but I wrote... I said then, which is why I wanted to do financial reform first, is you needed Old Testament justice.
Right.
Nothing... After the TARP and after the recession, the bailout of the banks and dealing with the Recovery Act that President Obama did, that's $1.7 trillion was offered to stabilize the economy, and nobody felt there was any accountability by the people, quote unquote, the experts and the elite upstairs. And that's why you have a middle class revolt.
And if anything,
it makes total sense.
It does. All the dominoes fall.
Yeah. We've seen regulations rolled back as if it was the whole thing, all the bailout was a punishment on the financial industry.
Well, you got two things that I think are risky going forward. You have higher concentration than pre the financial meltdown, higher concentration of banks, with an attempt by the banks and successful to roll back the very and not all the regulations were perfect. They needed some adjustment, but what they're doing now is going back in a way that you're bringing a level of risk in that is with a level of concentration of power that is not a good. That's a very bad cocktail. That will be served over the holiday season.
You, and again, the Vice special's coming up, but and the rest
have
will be in
it?
Your story. I don't think it's been aired
yet. You want to do that together? We'll get some popcorn and you and I just watch it together. I said, never mind.
Absolutely great. Just, hey, look, put that on Instagram, please.
Wow, you have less gray. You look actually healthier.
I suggested, I sit between your knees and you do my hair, and you went, you don't have any hair. plan to hire 1,000 cops. Where are we?
Today, we've hired our 1,000th in the last 2 weeks, 1,000 additional police on the streets of the city of Chicago.
It's great.
It is. And these young men and women are going through one of the most comprehensive rewrites of our training program to be better professional, better where every instance of interaction is a teachable moment. They all will have a body camera. They all will have a taser. They'll have different trainings on community policing. But we've added 1,000 police, and you can see what they're doing. You know, I will say one thing. When I was at the funeral for our lost officer.
Mm-hmm. Ed Mercy.
Mercy. Mm-hmm. I stand with the superintendent, the first deputy, opposite his watch, which is in the 2nd District, kind of the
right.
Bronzeville, Kenwood community. And they're all there. Now, I've done every graduation. I must have done 30-plus graduations, shook the hands of about a little over 3,000 officers. And I'm looking at them. We're waiting for the hearse to drive up. As I'm looking at these young men in the cold, I said to the soup, these are boys and girls. I mean, these are young kids. We're giving them an incredible responsibility. For some reason, just looking at them
at that
moment,
sure,
I realized, you know, and the officer who died.
Samuel Jimenez.
He has two young kids. He's 27. He must have joined the academy 24, took the test. Zachariah, my son, is 21. We give a lot of responsibility, and a lot of people at very young ages decide to sign up, and we have to ensure, and that's what's happened. I ran with them on Saturday when we opened up the Lakefront Trail, the police officer cadets.
I saw some things on your Instagram of you stretching before that run.
Well, yeah, you don't want to run in the cold and not stretch. But anyway, here they these are great people. They are joining the police department. They're doing public service. They don't have to do this. They have the capacity to do other things. And I think we should give them all the support need to do the jobs that we ask them to do.
And Eddie Johnson said when he was here, all the people that they hire, he has a hand in, like, a personal contact when they take the test and things like that. It's not just you put out a call and they all sign up and they get to...
We'll go speak to them today. We'll all see them. And it's really... But we've hit the thousands. A lot of people said, you can't do this in 2 years. It's not possible.
Got it.
We set a mission. We set a goal. And the entire department, the training, the recruitment, and it's the most diverse class in the history of the Chicago Police Department. They're representing every section of the city. All parts of the city get to participate rather than just a few neighborhoods. And I think that's a testament to the real effort that happened. And we set a goal, and this is a public policy goal that was achieved in the time frame we committed to.
Take a break. We'll come back with more of Mayor Emanuel in just a second. First, and Jen Weigel's going to join us just after 9. We've got a very interesting guest at 9:10 that she has a personal area of expertise in as well.
Yeah, you just last time you were on the show, you talked about you didn't want to be a lame duck mayor. You wanted to finish out your term and actually get some of the things done. You just mentioned in a big speech, I think it was last week, about three initiatives that you were going for: legalization of marijuana, a Chicago casino, and a constitutional amendment to deal with pensions. On the casino, you mentioned going to the southeast side and a spot on the southeast side that would be open. Mm-hmm. Why not downtown? Why not at McCormick Place?
Because it would actually ruin McCormick Place.
How so?
And so, well, first of all, there's of the three big convention centers, Orlando, Vegas, and Chicago. Orlando's known where you take your family just for entertainment. Vegas has a different entertainment. Chicago's known as the place you come to do business, sign contracts. You meet each other on the floor. You go to restaurants. You sign two-year deals. You take people off the floor, you're going to ruin why McCormick Place works. When I became mayor, it was fifth, even though it was the largest place in the world for convention. It had slipped to fifth. We're now back to being number one again, or near number one, and we're competing for shows we lost at Vegas and Orlando. We eliminated all the doubt between labor and management. So while I have a love-hate relationship with casinos, we lose $40 million a month to Hammond. So put it 4 miles before Hammond. We'll pull all that money. That's one. So I don't want it near McCormick. You don't want to have one gain, one loss. You can have two gains rather than one gain, one loss. But again, I'm not exactly there. The second thing is I'm also of that view as it relates to legalization. The governor-elect has called for it. If it's going to happen, my basic point is both resources go towards stabilizing police and fire and labor and municipal
and everyone pension. I think everyone's with the idea of trying to find new revenue opportunities, but the question remains who's paying in. If you do a casino on the southeast side of Chicago, are you targeting working class communities, black and brown people in that area that are going to go to that casino and spend the money?
Well, first of all, since they're going to Hammond, the reverse question is to you. Are you willing to send $40 million every month to Hammond, Indiana, those people, or capture it? Again, as I said, I have a love-hate relationship. It's happening. Should it happen in Chicago or should it happen in Hammond? Not whether it should or should not. It's just whether it should happen in Hammond or Chicago. Given that said, I think it would be an economic boon to the southeast side. It would capture that revenue so far as you dedicate it to the pensions. The same way we have done stuff on medicinal marijuana as it relates to health care and pain alleviation. On the other hand, if the governor is going to push legalization, there is revenue source. And my goal is if we need more revenue, before you ask the taxpayers for anything general, you've got to try everything else. And on the Constitution, we have two things from 1970, a flat income tax, which is I am for progressive income tax. I don't believe a 3% compounded COLA for people retiring at the age of 50, 55, while inflation is zero and current workers are taking either a pay cut with a furlough or basically minimal increase in their pay. There's nothing progressive about that. And my view is if you're going to do all the brain damage to open up the Constitution, make sure it's actually has progressive principles on both sides. Now, I understand certain people won't like that, and I get that. On the other hand, it requires a level of honesty. If we were drafting a Constitution today, not in 1970 when you had hyperinflation, when you have basically deflation to zero, would you actually have a pay raise for senior citizens and workers getting no pay raise? There is nothing progressive about that. And here's, I mean, the ultimate point is we are doing something, and the reason I said this is the next mayor in 2020 has to find $276 million for the pensions, and in 2022, another $310. That's $600 million just for one thing. That means no additional after school, no additional mentoring, no additional dollars for summer jobs. If you're willing to say, we're going to give $600 to this one project, but there'll be no libraries, there'll be no after school, there'll be no summer jobs, there'll be no mentoring addition. Every budget I've had, I've increased that. I don't think that's fair to the public. We have to be able to do both. That's why I've looked at making reforms to the way they're structured, finding additional revenue that goes to Hammond, Indiana, bringing it to Chicago. On the other hand, I also, every budget, eight in a row, we increased our investments to record highs of summer jobs, 32,000 kids, record high of after-school programs for 125,000 kids, and we created a mentoring program for 8,000 young men out of whole cloth when it was zero.
Listen, you're making a great case for you keeping the job.
I don't want the job.
No, I get that. But my point is the next person that steps in has got to be able to pick that ball up and run with it. And at a time where there's incredible lack of political will, what's more likely, to reopen the Constitution or there's the political will to get either marijuana or a casino done? Because as you said, you got to find the money.
Here's the thing. When I first ran in 2011, only about four or five people ran. Now you got 21 because we've done some hard things. You may not be in a great position, but if you do the hard things, people, the city will be better off. Proud of the progress we've made. There's stuff that still has to be built on, but when I hand off the baton, when you look at a series of things from our parks to our schools to our community colleges to the economy, the employment, we're today in a better position. We're not where we have to be, and not everybody is participating at the level you want them to, but we are not where we were in 2011 when we had 20% of the budget was out of whack. Every one of the pensions was headed towards insolvency within a decade. We had school system had the shortest school day in the United States. We didn't have full-day kindergarten, let alone full-day pre-K.
Right.
And our community colleges had the worst graduation rate in America. All that has been changed and more in one way or another to the improvement and to the upside. But we have a lot of work ahead of us.
And who gets the baton?
Whoever the voters pick. Or the Russians if they decide to play also.
Well, we know they're involved. It's great to see you. Happy holidays.
Happy and a healthy new year. Now, just one thing. We were earlier talking about Officer Jimenez. I stayed in touch with also the doctor and the pharmaceutical rep's family.
Sure.
Just everybody, remember what's important. Remember your kids, your family. Take a little time.
Yeah.
Just one step back. And this is a time, not just the holiday season, remember what's important in life.
Yeah, and take a little time over the Christmas holiday.
And I expect in 2019, rather than me giving you kale, you start reversing, give me kale.
Listen, I'm growing it right now.
No, that's the legalized marijuana that you're growing right now.
Different garden. Different garden. Mary Emanuel, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice to see you.